And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of July 12th, 2019. Today, we're happy to be rejoined by our busy, busy co-host, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. I'm so happy to be back.
Good. Good to have you back. So, Mariah, you have probably been following all this stuff, but we should be aware that there is this is a presidential election year, as you well know. Our next year is, and there has been a move to include a dedicated climate debate, about climate in this year's election cycle. So just to recount the history is that in 2016, the ill-fated election of 2016, there was essentially no discussion of climate in any of the debates on either side of the aisle. It was basically a non-issue. But since then, an organization called Sunrise Movement, plus a few other people, have recently begun to demand a climate debate. And this is in the face of the Democratic National Committee trying to manage the the herd of people that is running for president.
Gaggle.
The gaggle of people running. You know, how are they going to manage debates in some coherent way? And so they set up all these rules, none of which allowed for a dedicated climate debate. But the Sunrise Movement kept pushing and pushing and pushing. The first debate was held a few weeks ago, as you may well know. And I sat with my Excel spreadsheet open to document each question and how much time was asked about climate by our friends Rachel Maddow and the inimitable Chuck Todd.
That's
and
dedicated.
They got to all of 15 minutes and out of 4 hours of debate, there was something like 15 minutes. And what was really infuriating is that the framing of the questions, particularly from Mr. Todd, was all about how you're going to pay for it, right? Which is just maddening. So what's
right.
happened
it's,
since
then?
How
can then, we afford not to pay for it?
Yeah, well, exactly. We're going to pay one way or the other, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, because of this sort of lackluster results of the first debate, the pressure has increased on the people to organize a second, to have a dedicated climate event of some kind. That brings us to the president and you and I, Mariah. And so what's come up, once you start talking about having a climate-focused presidential debate, some of the questions that present themselves are, is it a good thing or a bad thing? You know, what questions should be asked in such a climate debate? And who should the moderators be?
Right? Yeah.
You know, so I'll give you a little airtime, Ryan. Tell me, do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing to have a climate debate?
Well, so Dave Roberts, of course, is where we're getting a lot of our information from.
Absolutely.
For this, right? Dave Roberts wrote an excellent article about for Vox about all of these ideas. And one of the points he makes is that, well, a couple of the points that he makes is that people are not necessarily interested in hearing a climate change debate, right? And a lot of these moderators and these news networks, they want to have the like high fire, memeifiable kind of discussions that can be then draw clicks, draw eyeballs, get people to go back to their site, right? I mean, and this is sort of the general problem with climate change is that it tends to be something that people are not super enthusiastic to listen to. Not you and I, notwithstanding,
right?
And our audience members, we are all, I mean, as you said, you had a spreadsheet out to see how many times it was talked about. So we find it riveting. And of course, it should be something. It's tied to every issue that Americans care about. I mean, it's this is certainly something that it should be a top issue. And maybe some of that is in the way that it's, you know, categorized or painted.
Right.
Like
right.
We've talked a lot about that in other shows. But at any rate, that can be something that pushes some of these moderators away from talking about it in debates because they don't find it something that, you know, people really, you know, get jazzed about, so to speak.
And I think the idea that all you're going to do by having a climate debate is to create opportunities for the bad guys to, you know, make you look like an idiot, right? They're going to have lots of fodder for negative campaigning later on by putting people on the spot now.
Right. Raising taxes, banning cows, right?
Yeah.
You know, all of that stuff, right? I mean, and, you know, Well, people do care about climate change. I think it's steadily rising. It's maybe 51%, and I guess that I recently read something that 69% of Americans, 69% of Americans are worried about climate change. So it's certainly going to be. I think this is its year for presidential election. Like this is at least some time where we will see more airtime than what did you say? It was 12 minutes.
But I mean, I think the positive side, despite the opportunity for debacle-like kind of questioning, I think the exposure is good, right? We've all said that talking about climate can only be good. So forcing the discussion into the public domain can only, in my mind, I think net-net, given all the opportunities, a climate debate is the right way to go. It forces a discussion of something that we... at least I have railed about for years, is that it doesn't get the press coverage. Nobody wants to talk about it. And so I think it's a worthwhile thing to demand a dedicated climate debate. So there you go.
I mean, I agree with you for sure. I mean, obviously, I want to see the different platforms of each of these candidates on climate, because that's what I'm voting on, right? It's who is going to be the strongest for climate change. But, you know, just to sort of push back on that, we just because of the way the politics are oriented in this country at this point in time, we know that a Democratic candidate is going to be better than a Republican candidate, well, Trump, on climate change. And from that perspective, there is this wiggle room of like, well, I'd rather have a less than perfect climate candidate in there than a Republican. Yeah. And, you know, to your point, if it does open up some of, you know, if this climate change debate does open up some attack angles for the, you know,
the bad guys.
Eventual, yeah, Republican-Democrat debate, you know, that can be tricky if it creates memes or viral videos. I still think, like I said, I'm with you 100%. I think that a climate change debate is really important just because that's the single most important thing we can do right now is to talk about climate change and to sort of make sure that it's clear that the majority of Americans care about this issue. I think dangerous waters there.
Yes, but I think Dave Roberts' point, and you're quite right, where I will put up links to both of the articles that go into some detail about this. I think Dave Roberts' point is that the framing of the questions, it has to be done in a way that is intelligent. And so we'll put aside for a moment the question of who should be asking the questions. I mean, I saw, I guess it was Kate Aronoff put up a tweet saying that whoever asks the questions in a climate debate has to have a basic fluency in the topic, right? I don't think either Chuck Todd or Rachel Maddow have that, right? There's very few people that have that. It's almost like you need to go out of the journalistic
that's a big problem.
Realm. But we'll come back to that. So, I mean, I think the phrasing of the questions and what we get into in a climate debate, in quotation marks. In fact, I think we ought to change it and change our own language. We don't want to debate about climate change. And Dave Roberts is quite clear that we don't want to be talking about science. It should be a climate policy debate. Right? I mean, what are we going to do about these things as opposed to, is it real? So a very important distinction. And in fact, those are the two of the main points that Roberts makes in his article is that in a debate, the top level framework should be that the questions in a presidential debate should be about what the person will do with the powers of the presidency to address climate change. And that the science of climate change is not central. What's really central is the politics and the power associated with the people who are trying to prevent actions. So
And I think that point about the science not being central is two-pronged, right? The first prong is that there's no debate about whether the science is real or not, right? That's as incontrovertible as the fact that gravity exists. So that's certainly one of the points is this is, and I think probably the majority of Democrats understand that this is not a debate about whether the science is real or not, but that point is worth, I think, clarifying. But also that the science is not what motivates or persuades people to be interested in the issue. And that's why talking about the science, which we have been doing for 30 years with no real profound movement, right? I mean, that's what has mired us in some of these problems is that we were so focused on talking about the science that it's now sort of falls on deaf ears in some sense, and it's just not a motivating, even though it's obviously real and incredibly important. And I am in no ways disparaging the decades of amazing work that the scientists have done on this. But the point being that the science is not moving the public in the way that we need it to. And so now we need sort of a different rhetoric and a different framing and a different way to look at and talk about it. And some of that comes in the policy, in talking about the future that we want to see and all of the opportunities and the transition that could be to bring us to a better place if we start using renewable energy. I mean, just thinking about, like, I was kind of driving into Boston this morning and I'm looking and I mean, I don't know all of the true science that's happening here, but you could see it's kind of enveloped in this haze, which is from the heat. It may be a temperature inversion, possibly capturing some of the fossil fuel burning, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's just fog. I don't know. But it made me think, you know, why are we still burning all of these dirty chemicals when we could be producing no air emissions?
Well,
you know?
I'll take you back 30 years or so to Bill McKibben, who wrote The End of Nature, right? Unfortunately, in this day and age, every time you see some event, you have to say, what fraction of human interference caused that event, right? So as you look out at the haze over Boston, it's probably fog, but there's some level of climate, you know, human-induced causation in there that you don't know anymore. So, all right, well, look, what I think is interesting to do is to talk through some of the questions that Dave Roberts, and again, in Umair Infar is the other person who wrote
Irfan.
Yeah. Umair Irfan. I mean, and I think the reason these questions are interesting, although we talk about them in the context of a presidential climate policy debate, really these kind of are a proxy for the questions that we ought to be discussing in our public discourse, right? You'll see Umair asked, you know, who's responsible for climate change, right? How, you know, that's a big question that is not just a presidential debate question. But anyway,
I know this might take us sideways, and maybe we'll have to do two episodes where we talk about set up the set it up and then talk about the actual questions in the next episode. But I could see it being a proxy, but then I also, and I want to have hope in the sort of population of America that we do have the attention span and interest to listen to this, but maybe do people really want to listen and talk and hear us discussing this in such granular detail? We've got the problem with people want the funny memes and the funny this and the stuff that really draws them into it. And I hope that our American population does care enough about this to go through this sort of granular information and really thinking about the policy and what it could look like. But
I think so? It goes back to one of the points you were making is that what people are interested in is a vision of the future. Right. And so that brings us back to something like, you know, people don't, I mean, even I have a tough time listening to the details of utility policy, you know, who's going to pay for what surcharge, right? What's the buy-in tariff? I mean, there's a lot of nitty gritty stuff. But the real issue is, you know, I think it comes back, is something like the Green New Deal. Does that allow us to paint a vision of the future that is appealing, that people are desperately interested in, right? A healthy future for our children, you know, all the good things that can flow from climate action. I think that's the compelling thing, because we're never going to, you know, as I say, we're never, you know, people's eyes glaze over when you talk about how many gigawatts of wind turbines you're going to put up. Right? That's a technique. I mean, the point is we're going to make the world better and safer. And that's what people would be compelling TV. That's what I'm thinking, right?
Right. I mean, it's the sort of, we're going to the moon and it's going to be hard, but we're going to do it because that's the thing to do. Good old, you know, JFK speech. Right?
You don't need to worry about how big the nozzle is on the Apollo Saturn rocket, right? That's
right,
a detail,
exactly.
Right? We're all going to the moon. And maybe that's a good way to put it, right? It's like all that detail gets subsumed onto the idea of what it is we're trying to do as a country. And that, I think, is compelling TV. Right?
So that's maybe what the candidates need to be focusing on, is they need to get up there and they need to give us, present a vision of what the world could look like in spite of what it is today, right? Get up there.
Absolutely.
And I did borrow that line a little bit from Hadestown, which is a musical I've been very enthusiastic about recently. But really getting up there, and the candidates, if they can get up there and say, you know, this is what I want the world to look like in 2050. Here's how I want our kids to get around. Here's how I want the, you know, roads to be structured, right? Focusing on what the world should look like. And I mean, I think obviously the climate policy is important, but maybe that takes you into that arena where people can pull out the memes about, you know, cow flatulence is, you know, like what we're worried about. Really, if the candidates are really focusing on painting the picture of what they want the world to look like, that's harder to make into a negative meme.
Exactly.
If you tell us what the vision of what it looks like to land on the moon, you know, the failure of imagination is going to be your drawback instead of, you know,
I think that's a great, great place. I'm going to make a command decision that we are going to make another show where we go through these questions that we would want to ask. So, dear listener, this is the first part of a show where we are discussing, you know, what's the implications of a dedicated climate policy debate. We'll put up another show where we actually try and march through what the specific kinds of questions that we'd like to see asked in a climate policy debate. And of course, we'll ask you to send us your ideas on what questions should be asked as well, right?
Or your vision of a climate future. What should the candidates paint?
So let me do this. What we'll say is I'll put up links, particularly to this Dave Roberts and Umer Irfan article that talks about the climate questions. That'll be at on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can go to the Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can send us your vision in an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. podcast@massclimateaction.net. And as I've said, if you really want it, take out your cell phone, record a 3-minute description of your vision of the future, send it to us. Maybe we'll be able to use it. You can listen to this show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, yada, yada, yada. We're on Podbean. We're on Spotify now. I want to send our thanks to Dr. Tucker for his continuing research support. It's very helpful. And we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for this interesting discussion.
Thank you.
I look forward to chatting about these questions soon. Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll see you again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Very cool.